Chapter 14. The next he knew, Joseph Schilling stood on a desert, feeling the reassuring tug of Terra's gravity once more. The sun, blinding him, spilled down in gold-hot familiar torrents, and he squinted, trying to see, holding up his hand to ward off its rays. "Don't stop," a voice said. He opened his eyes and saw, walking beside him across the uneven sand, Dr. Phillipson. The elderly, sprightly little doctor was smiling. "Keep moving," Dr. Phillipson said in a pleasant, conventional tone of voice, "or we'll die out here, and you wouldn't like that."
"Explain it to me," Joe Schilling said, but he kept on walking.
Dr. Phillipson remained beside him, walking with easy, long strides.
"You certainly broke up the game," Dr. Phillipson chuckled. "It never occurred to them that you'd cheat."
"They cheated first. They changed the value of the card."
"Well, to them, that's legitimate, a basic move in the game. It's a favorite play by the Titanian game players to exert their extrasensory faculties on the card. It's supposed to be a contest between the sides. The one who's drawn the card struggles to keep its value constant, you see. By yielding to the altered value, you lost. But by moving your piece in conformity to it, you thwarted them."
"What happened to the stake?"
"Detroit?" Dr. Phillipson laughed. "It remains a stake, unclaimed. Well, you see, the Titan game players believe in following the rules. You may not believe that, but it's true. Their rules, yes, but rules nonetheless. Now, I don't know what they'll do. They've been waiting to play against you in particular for a long time. But I'm sure they won't try again after what just happened. It must have been psychically unnerving for them. It'll be a great while before they recover."
"What faction do they represent, the extremists?"
"Oh, no. The Titanian game players are exceptionally moderate in their political thinking."
"What about you?" Schilling said.
Dr. Phillipson said,
"I admit to being an extremist. That's why I'm here on Terra."
In the blinding midday sunlight, his heat needle sparkled as it rose and fell with his long strides.
"We're almost there, Mr. Schilling. One more hill and you'll see it. It's built low to the ground, attracts little attention."
"Are all the Vugs here on Earth extremists?"
"No,"
Dr. Phillipson said.
"What about E.B. Black, the detective?"
Dr. Phillipson said nothing.
"Not of your party," Schilling decided. There was no answer.
Phillipson was not going to say.
"I should have trusted it when I had the chance," Schilling said.
Perhaps so,
Dr. Phillipson said, nodding. Ahead, Schilling saw a Spanish-style building with tile roof and pale adobe walls, contained by an ornamental railing of black iron. The Dig-In Motel, the neon sign, turned off and inert red.
"Is Laird Sharp here?" Schilling asked.
"Sharp is on Titan," Dr. Phillipson said. "Perhaps I will bring him back, but certainly not at this time."
Dr. Phillipson briefly scowled.
"An agile-brained creature, that Sharp, I must admit I don't care for him."
With a white linen handkerchief, he mopped his red and perspiring forehead, slowing down a little now as they came up onto the flagstone path of the motel.
"And as for your cheating, I didn't much care for that either."
He seemed tense and irritable now. Schilling wondered why. The door of the motel office was open, and Dr. Phillipson went toward it, peering into the darkness within.
"Rothman,"
he said in a hesitant, questioning voice. A figure appeared, a woman. It was Patricia McLean.
"Sorry I'm late," Dr. Phillipson began. "But this man here and a companion showed up at the—"
Patricia McLean said, "She's out of control. Alan couldn't help. Get away." She ran past Dr. Phillipson and Joe Schilling, across the parking lot toward a car parked there. Then all at once she was gone. Dr. Phillipson grunted, cursed, stepped back from the motel door as swiftly as if he had been seared. High in the midday sky, Joe Schilling saw a dot rising and then disappearing toward invisibility. On and on it rushed, away from Earth, away from the ground, until finally he could no longer see it. His head ached from the glare and the effort of seeing, and he turned to Dr. Phillipson.
"My God, what was that?" he started to say.
"Look," Dr. Phillipson said. He pointed with his heat needle at the motel office, and Joe Schilling looked inside. He could not see at first, and then by degrees his eyes accustomed themselves to the gloom.
On the floor lay twisted bodies of men and women, tangled together like multi-armed monsters, as if they had been shaken and then dropped there, discarded, the remains jammed together, forced into an impossible fusion. Marianne McLean sat on the floor in the corner, curled up, her face buried in her hands. Pete Garden and a well-dressed middle-aged man whom Schilling did not know stood together silently, their faces blank.
"Rothman," Dr. Phillipson choked, staring at one of the shattered bodies.
He turned toward Pete Garden.
"When?"
he said.
"She just now did it," Pete Garden murmured.
"You're lucky,"
the well-dressed middle-aged man said to Dr. Phillipson.
"If you had been here, she would have killed you too. You're fortunate. You missed your appointment."
Dr. Phillipson, shaking, lifted his heat needle and pointed it unsteadily at Marianne McLean.
"Don't," Pete Garden said. "They tried that at the end."
"Moutreau,"
Dr. Phillipson said.
"Why didn't she?"
"He's a Terran," Pete Garden said. "The only one of you who was. So she didn't touch him."
"The best thing," the well-dressed man, Moutreau, said, "is for none of us to do anything. Move as little as possible. That's the safest."
He kept his eyes fixed on the huddled shape of Marianne McLean.
"She didn't even miss her father," Moutreau said. "But Patricia got away. I don't know what happened to her."
"Well, the girl got hurt, too," Dr. Phillipson said. "We watched. We didn't understand then."
He tossed the heat needle away. It rolled across the floor and came to rest against the far wall. His face was gray.
"Does she understand what she's done?"
Pete Garden said,
"She knows. She understands the dangerousness of her talent, and she doesn't want to use it again."
To Joe Schilling, he said,
"They couldn't seem to manage her. They had partial control, but it kept slipping away. I watched the struggle. It's been going on here in this room for the last few hours, even when their last member came."
He pointed to a squashed, crumpled body, a man with glasses and light hair.
"Don," they called him. "They thought he'd turn the tide, but Moutreau threw his talent in with hers. It all happened in a second. One minute they were sitting on their chairs, the next she just simply began flinging them around like rag dolls."
He added,
"It wasn't pleasant, but,"
he shrugged,
"anyhow, that's what happened."
Dr. Phillipson said,
"A dreadful loss."
He glanced at Marianne with hatred.
"Poltergeist," he said. "Unmanageable. We knew, but because of Patricia and Alan, we accepted her as she was. Well, we'll have to begin all over again from the start. Of course, I have nothing personally to fear from her.
I can return to my primary nexus, Titan, whenever I wish. Presumably her talent doesn't extend that far. And if it does, there's not much we can do. I'll take the chance. I have to. I think she can freeze you here if she wants to, Utro said. Marianne, he said sharply. In the corner, the girl raised her head. Her cheeks, Joe Schilling saw, were tear-stained. Do you have any objection if this last one returns to Titan? I don't know, she said listlessly. Joe Schilling said,
They've got Sharp there.
I see, Mutro said. Well, that makes a difference. To Marianne, he said, Don't let Phillipson go. All right, she murmured, nodding. Dr. Phillipson shrugged. Good point. Well, it's agreeable to me. Sharp can return here. I'll go to Titan. His tone was calm, but Schilling saw the man's eyes were opaque with shock and tension. Arrange for it now, Mutro said. Of course, Dr. Phillipson said. I don't want to be around this girl. That must be obvious even to you. And I can hardly say I envy you and your people depending on a crude, erratic power of this sort. It's apt to rebound, or be turned deliberately against you at any moment. He added, Sharp is now back from Titan, at my clinic in Idaho. Can that be verified? Mutro said to Joe Schilling. Place a call to your car there, Dr. Phillipson said. You should be in it or close by it by now. Going outdoors, Joe Schilling found a parked car.
Whose are you?
He asked it, opening its door. Mr. and Mrs. McLean's, the Rushmore effect stated.
I want to use your vidphone.
Seated within the sun-scorched interior of the car, Joe Schilling placed a call to his own car at Dr. Phillipson's clinic in the outskirts of Pocatello, Idaho. What the hell do you want now? The voice of Max, his car, answered after a wait.
Is Laird Sharp there? Joe Schilling asked.
Who cares?
Listen, Schilling began.
But all at once, Laird Sharp's features formed on the small vidscreen.
You're okay? Schilling asked him.
Sharp curtly nodded. Did you see the Titanian game players, Joe? How many were there? I couldn't seem to count them.
I not only saw them, I conned them, Joe Schilling said. So they right away bumped me back here. Take Max, you know, my car, and fly back to San Francisco. I'll meet you there.
To the old sullen car, he said,
Max, you cooperate with Laird Sharp, goddammit.
All right, Max said irritably. I'm cooperating.
Joe Schilling returned to the motel room.
I'll preview your narration about the attorney, Mutro said. We let Phillipson go.
Schilling looked around. It was so. There was no sign of Dr. E.R. Phillipson.
It's not over, Pete Garden said. Phillipson is back on Titan. Hawthorne is dead.
But their organization, Mutro said, it's abolished. Marianne and I are the only ones remaining. I couldn't believe it when I saw her destroy Rothman. He was the pivot of the organization's power.
He now bent down beside Rothman's body, touching it.
What's the wisest thing to do now? Joe Schilling said to Pete. We can't pursue them to Titan, can we?
He did not want to face the game players of Titan again. And yet... Pete said,
We'd better bring in E.B. Black. It's the only thing I can think of at this point that might help, otherwise we're finished. We can trust Black, can we?
Mutro said.
Schilling said, Dr. Phillipson implied that we could.
He hesitated.
Yes, I vote we take the chance.
So do I, Pete said,
and Mutro, after a pause, brusquely nodded.
What about you, Mary?
Pete turned to the girl, who still sat curled up in a rigid, stricken ball.
I don't know, she said finally. I don't know who to believe in or trust anymore. I don't even know about myself.
It's got to be done, Joe Schilling said to Pete. In my opinion, anyhow. He or it is looking for you. He's with Carol. If he's not reliable...
Schilling broke off and scowled.
Then he's got Carol,
Pete agreed stonily.
Yes, Schilling nodded.
Pete said, call him from here. Together they went outside to the McLean's parked car. Joe Schilling placed the call to the apartment in San Rafael. If we're making a mistake, Joe Schilling thought, it probably means Carol's death and the death of their baby. I wonder which it is, he asked himself, a boy or a girl. They have those tests now. They can tell after the third week. Pete, of course, would accept either. He smiled a little. Pete said tensely, I've got him. On the screen, the image of a Vug formed, and Joe Schilling reflected that it looked, to him at least, like any other Vug. This is what Dr. Phillipson really looks like, he knew, what Pete saw, and he thought he was hallucinating.
Where are you, Mr. Garden? The Vug's query came to them from the speaker. I see you have Mr. Schilling there with you. What do you require from the Coast Police Authority? We are ready to dispatch a ship when and where you tell us.
We're coming back, Pete said. We don't need any ship. How is Carol?
Mrs. Garden is anxiously concerned, but physically in satisfactory condition.
There are 9 dead Vugs here, Joe Schilling said.
E.B. Black said instantly,
Of the Wahpeyon, the extremist party?
Yes, Schilling said. One returned to Titan. He had been here, a Dr. E.R. Phillipson of Pocatello, Idaho. You know, the well-known psychiatrist. We urge you to take his clinic at once. There could be others entrenched there.
We will shortly do that.
E.B. Black promised.
Are the killers of my colleague, Wade Hawthorne, among the dead?
Yes, Joe Schilling said.
A relief,
E.B. Black said.
Give us your location and we will send someone out to undertake whatever dispositionary chores are necessary.
Pete gave him the information.
That's that, Schilling said as the screen faded.
He did not know how to feel. Had they done the right thing?
We will know before very long, he said to himself.
Together they walked back to the motel room, neither of them saying anything.
If they get us, Pete said, pausing at the door of the room, I still say we did the best we could. You can't know everything. This is all, he gestured, blurred and twisting, people and things merging back and forth into each other. Maybe I haven't recovered from last night.
Joe Schilling said,
Pete, I saw the game players of Titan. It was enough.
What should we do? Pete said.
Get Pretty Blue Fox back into being.
And then what? Joe Schilling said.
Play.
Against?
The Titanian game players,
Joe Schilling said.
We have to. They're not going to give us any choice.
Together, they re-entered the motel room. As they flew back to San Francisco, Marianne said faintly, I don't feel their control over me as strongly as I did. It's waned. Moutreau glanced at her.
Let's hope so.
He looked utterly tired.
I preview... he said to Pete Garden, your efforts to get your group restored. Want to know the outcome?
Yes, Pete said.
The police will grant it. By tonight, you'll be a legal game-playing body again as before. You will meet at your condominium apartment in Carmel and plan your strategy. At this point, there is a division into parallel futures. The hinge on a disputed fact. whether your group permits you to bring Mary Ann McLean in as a new game-playing bindman.
What are the two futures branching from that? Pete asked.
I can see the one without her very clearly. Let's simply say it's not good. The other, it's blurred because Mary is a variable and can't be previewed within casual frameworks. She introduces the causal principle of synchronicity.
Moutreau was silent a moment.
I think, on the basis of what I preview, I would advise you to make the attempt to bring her into the group, even though it's illegal.
That's right, Joe Schilling said, nodding. It's strictly against the bylaws of bluff-playing entities. No Psi of any description can be admitted, but our antagonists aren't non-Psi humans. They're titans and telepaths. I see her value. With her in our group, the telepath factor is balanced. Otherwise, they hold an absolute advantage. He recalled the alteration in the card which he had drawn. Its change from 12 to 11. We couldn't win against that, he realized. And even with Mary.
I should be admitted too, if possible, Moutreau said. Although, again, legally, I'm also inadmissible. Pretty Blue Fox must be made to comprehend the issues involved, what the stakes are this time. It's not just an exchange of property deeds, not a competition among bindmen to see who's top man. It's our old struggle with an enemy, renewed after all these years, if it ever ceased in the first place. It never did cease. Mary Ann spoke up. We knew that, the people in our organization. Whether we were Vugs or Terrans, we agreed on that.
What can you see us obtaining from E.B. Black and the police power? Pete asked Moutreau.
A preview meeting between the Area Commissioner, U.S. Cummings, and E.B. Black, but I can't seem to foresee the outcome. There is something which U.S. Cummings is involved in that introduces another variable. I wonder. U.S. Cummings may be an extremist. What is it called?
The Wapenan, Joe Schilling said. That's what E.B. Black called it.
He had never heard the words before the Vug detective had said them. He rolled them around in his mind, trying to get the flavor of them. But they were impenetrable. Shut tight to him. He gave up. He could not imagine what such a party was like or how it felt to belong to it.
I can't empathize with them, he realized. And that's bad because if we can't put ourselves in their places, we can't predict what they're going to do, even with the use of our precog. He did not feel very confident. However, he did not tell that to the people in the car with him.
Soon, he thought, we, the augmented game-playing group Pretty Blue Fox, will make our first move against the Titanians. We'll have, perhaps, the help of Moutreau and Mary Ann McLean. Will that be enough? Moutreau can't see, and no one can count on Mary Ann, as Dr. Phillipson pointed out. And yet he was glad they had her. Without Mary Ann, he thought caustically, Pete and I would be back there at the motel in the middle of the Nevada desert, sitting in on Titanian strategy.
I'll be glad to contribute title deeds to both of you, Pete said to Mary Ann and Dave Moutreau. Mary, you can have San Rafael. Moutreau, you can have San Anselmo. Those will bring you to the table. I hope.
No one spoke. No one felt optimistic enough to.
How do you bluff, Pete said, against telepaths?
It was a good question. It was, in fact, the question on which everything depended. And none of them could answer it. They can't alter the value of the cards we draw, Schilling said to himself, because we've got Mary Ann to exert a contra-pressure, stabilizing them as we hold them. But If we can develop a strategy, Pete said, we'll need the collective minds of everyone in Pretty Blue Fox. Among all of us, there must be an idea we can use.
You think so? Schilling said.
It's got to be, Pete said harshly.